I like to call to order this special meeting of, excuse me, the special meeting of the Budget and Governance Committee. We are here at Emeryville City Hall in the council chambers. We have some water? Okay. At 1330 Park Avenue here in Emeryville, Madam Clerk, the roll, please.
Member.
Here. Oh, Madam Secretary, my apologies. The roll, please.
Sorry, I'll do the roll. Member Carr?
Present.
And Chair Welch?
Present.
Thank you.
Item three is public comment. Were there any single members of the public here with us, or did we receive any written public comments for this committee?
No.
Okay. Moving on to item four, approval of the May 27th, 2025 special meeting action minutes. Member Carr, did you have any updates or, thank you, did you have any updates or any comments, changes to the minutes?
No. I can move approval of those minutes.
I will second that. I did not have any updates either. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Item five, 5.1, discussion on research of revenue measures for 2026. And Sharon, I believe you are teed up for that.
Good. Good morning, members of the Budget and Governance Committee. Sharon Friedrichsen, Finance Director. I have with me Brian Mora from RGS, and on the meeting virtually, we also have representatives from HDL and NBS that will help answer technical questions. And so we will begin. Next slide, please. The purpose of today's discussion will be to start with a little bit of background related to this item. Then we'll go into the different revenue options for consideration, including business license, parcel tax, transaction and use tax, transient occupancy tax, and utility user tax. We'll then proceed with discussion and recommendations with the purpose to receive recommendations from this committee related to potential revenue measures for 2026 to provide to City Council. Next slide, please. As way of background, in the spring of 2025, City Council attended a workshop related to their strategic plan goal setting. From the strategic plan workshop, several priorities emerged, including the direction for staff to look at increasing revenue measures in terms of budget and audits and making sure we were doing due diligence in securing existing revenue, and more importantly, to also research potential revenue measures for 2026. At the same time as Council was proceeding with their strategic plan, City staff was commencing with the biannual budget process for fiscal year 25 through fiscal year 27. During this discussion, it emerged that the general fund was facing a structural deficit in the magnitude of 8 to projected 13 million in the next several years. Next slide. While we're going to focus today on revenue enhancement opportunities, overall, the approach should be looked at in terms of multi-pronged strategy related to fiscal sustainability. This includes work by city staff in terms of audits and cost recovery, work related to economic development and ways to grow our local businesses, looking at ways we can control our expenditures, looking at ways we can be more successful in pursuing grants, and again, the purpose of today's discussion to look at possible revenue enhancement. Next slide, please. We're going to start today with a discussion on parcel tax. First of all, a parcel tax is considered a non-value-based tax that's levied on a parcel of property. Unlike our secured property tax, which is based on the assessed value, a parcel tax is based on a different methodology. That approach can either be a flat rate per parcel, it may be a flat rate per building square foot, or it could be established using different rates based on land use. A parcel tax can include an inflationary index so that the amount of revenue generated from a parcel tax can increase by a consumer price index. And other factors that may be considered include whether to institute an age or income-based exemption to the parcel tax being levied. It's important to note that parcel tax, unlike the other measure options that we'll be looking at, do require a two-thirds voter approval rather than a simple majority. And it should also be noted that a parcel tax, if implemented, would include the entire city. So the boundary of the parcel tax would consist of the citywide boundary as well. Next slide, please. We wanted to provide some context related parcel taxes and the success in the neighboring jurisdictions related to ballot measures. In November of 2024, 42 parcel taxes were considered by the voters, of which 28 passed. You can see on the slide a flavor of the different type of measures that were approved by the voters in Berkeley, Oakland, and other cities. You'll note that some of those measures were an increase to an existing parcel tax in terms of changing the rates, and some were completely new parcel taxes. Next slide, please. So the first option to consider related to a special parcel tax is a flat rate per parcel. This approach assesses a flat amount or the same amount on all taxable parcels based on the amount of revenue estimated to be generated. You can see based on our modeling, there are just under 5,000 taxable parcels. In order to generate $3.5 million in revenue, the parcel tax would be roughly $721, and you can see the different variations of that amount increasing all the way up to slightly over $1,000 a parcel to generate $5 million in revenue. Next slide, please. The second option would be to assess a tax based on the square footage of a parcel. Again, you can see just slightly over 19,000 building square feet within the city. If we wanted to generate $3.5 million in revenue, that would be slightly less than 19 cents per square foot. You can again see through the modeling the proportional increase in the building square foot rate to generate additional revenue. And as a hypothetical, we looked at the average square foot of a single family home. If it was taxed per square footage, that would equal to about $356 per year. If we used a flat rate, it would be $721, as we noted in the previous slide. In this model, you can see that the non-residential buildings generate about 61% of the estimated $3.5 million in revenue. Next slide, please. The third option is a combination of the first two options. This uses a flat rate for the residential parcels, and you can see the amounts indicated on the slide, anywhere from $50 up to $125, again, depending on the amount of revenue we wish to generate, and then a square footage amount for non-residential. And you can see there the burden on the residential land use category is about $394,000. The majority of the revenue over nearly $3.2 million would be through non-residential. I'd like to, next slide, please. And again, if we used a inflationary index, such as a CPI of 2 or 3%, you can see what the annual increase would look like based on a existing starting point of $3.5 million. Again, just to provide context on how this revenue would grow. Again, a lot of the revenue would be constrained by the number of parcels we have, and as well as the existing square footage of buildings. With that, I'd like to pause and see if the committee has any questions on this particular revenue source. We do have our consultant from NBS available with us for a brief amount of time this morning, and then I'll move on to the next revenue.
Yeah, I have a question, just a general question for this presentation. Has this already been presented to the Budget Advisory Committee?
Correct, Council Member or Vice Chair Kerr. It was presented on Tuesday, and we will be discussing the recommendations later in the presentation.
Thank you.
I had a question. Can we go back to slide 9 just briefly? And so just to understand, these are the flat rates for the residential. So if the 3.5 million revenue target we're talking about, it would be $50 a year across the board for all residential units. So with this model, it sounds it's really the cheapest towards the residential units, even at the $5 million target, the residential property owners would only be paying $125 a year. And then obviously for the non-residential, it would depend. So, okay. And yeah, that was like, it had moved by very quick, but I'm like, oh, did I see that right? That it's only $125 for annually.
You were correct, Chair Welch.
Okay. Let me just quickly add one comment. One of the comments we had with the Budget Advisory Committee is when cities look at parcel taxes like this on the residential side, they try to keep the amount of the tax around $100 a year, more or less. And so that's another factor to consider as you consider this option.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. That was my only question.
And we'll move on to the next revenue option. This is a discussion about our business license tax. Currently, the city license tax is $1 per 1,000 gross receipts in revenue. We have budgeted at about $6.6 million in revenue from the business license tax for our current fiscal year. You can see in the chart the high in terms of business license tax received was about $7.7 million in fiscal year 22-23. It's been decreasing downward a little bit and is projected to remain fairly flat in the next several years absent a rate change. However, we will be looking at models that could potentially increase our estimated revenue to $7.5 to $13.3 million. Next slide, please. The city engaged HDL companies to help with a business license study, and we're going to hit some of the highlights of that study. Next slide, please, April. Again, just to note some of the basic components of a business license tax, and you can see there on the slide, it includes things such as a taxable activity, the measure of the taxable activity, the rate, the calculation that's used to determine the tax rate, and of course, the results. Next slide, please. So before we look at models of where the city could potentially go in terms of rate restructuring, we wanted to spend a few minutes on where the city is now related to business license tax. Next slide. Again, this chart also illustrates the concept that was shown previously, which is that our business license tax revenue, again, you can see there the high about $7.4 million and has been dropping down the last several fiscal years. Next slide, please. However, while our revenue is down because of gross receipts, the business count remains fairly consistent, which is a positive indicator. You can see on the chart we have about 2,000 to 2,200 businesses that are located within the city of Emeryville. We also assess a business license tax on businesses that do work within the city but not are not physically located, and we call those outside businesses, as noted by the purple shading in the bar chart. Next slide, please. Again, as currently indicated, our taxes are $1 per 1,000 in gross receipts. We currently have about 56 business classifications in our business license tax structure. And in addition to the actual tax, businesses also pay processing fees, state fees, and but those are not part of the study today. Next slide. Again, this is just a snapshot of the current 3,190 businesses and how those businesses are spread over our category, and again, the primary tax type. Next slide, please. Also important to note is the share of the revenue that's generated by the type of business. You can see looking at the pie chart, if you start at 12 o'clock and work your way around the pie chart in a clockwise direction, you'll see that our rental commercial property generate about 18% of the business, research and development 12%, healthcare 8%, manufacturing 7%, movie and TV production 7%, and you can see the other categories as well. And also important to note that we have all other types, which represent 121 businesses and represent about 25% of the business category. Next slide. Also important to note that our top 100 businesses account for 74% of the city's business activity, or the total reported gross receipts. The same top 100 also represent about 71% of the taxes collected. Next slide. We can go to the next slide. Again, as part of the work of HDL, is to look at this, the city of Emeryville's business tax license structure compared to other cities. We looked at a handful of neighboring cities, including Berkeley and Oakland, as well as other cities that had a very similar business composition in terms of life science, research and development, and retail. And you can see on this chart a quick snapshot of the various cities, their population, their business count, and various revenue statistics. Also important to note is the last time the ordinance was adopted or updated by the city. We have quite a few that have recently updated their ordinance in 2024. Emeryville's ordinance was adopted in 1984 and has not been updated since. And you can see that most of the cities use a gross receipt basis, although a handful use an employee count. And again, most of the cities do not have a cap. Next slide, please. Again, a snapshot of how the city of Emeryville has performed compared to neighboring cities. You'll notice the drop in Emeryville that coincided with the pandemic. You'll note that it's much more pronounced compared to some of our neighboring and other comparable cities in terms of the dip, whereas several of the other cities have a much more consistent trend line in terms of their business license. Next slide, please. Again, we'll spend some time in a more detailed analysis looking at the city of Emeryville, Berkeley, South San Francisco, and Walnut Creek. Again, a high-level rate calculation spreadsheet based on business categories, and you can see the differences between Emeryville, Berkeley, South San Francisco, and Walnut Creek. Next slide, please. And again, another way to look at Emeryville compared to the other comparable cities in our study is by the business type, the gross receipts, the number of employees, and you can see how the tax would be assessed in each of those jurisdictions. Next slide, please. And also, important comparison is the estimated revenue that is attributed to those hypothetical businesses, again, based on a hypothetical gross receipts in Emeryville compared to the other cities. And you can see there's a quite a range. For example, third line down, biotech, R&D business, you can see the hypothetical yield in Emeryville compared to Berkeley and South San Francisco and Walnut Creek, Emeryville being substantially lower, particularly compared to Berkeley. Next slide. We'd like to spend some time on some of the modeling that HDL has done for us related to potential changes in the rate structure and what that estimated revenue might look like. The first model is considered a single gross receipt model. This means that there is one gross receipt rate for all the businesses. There's a small minimum fee, but again, it has the primarily benefit of that it's simple for businesses to know what they'll pay. It also has the added bonus of increasing revenue. It also promotes equity, as all businesses pay the same rate, but it does have a con as well, in that it doesn't consider the business type in deciding rates. Next slide. Again, under this model, the flat rate would be a $25 flat rate up to $25,000 in gross receipts, and then the tax levied would be $1.50 per $1,000 of gross receipts, which you can see in option one. And then option two increases that gross receipts tax to $2. You can see under option one, there would be a projected increased revenue of about $940,000. In option two, projected revenue increase of about $3.4 million, which if you add that to our current estimated revenue of $3.6 million, you get close to $10 million in estimated revenue. Next slide, please. The second model is considered a variable gross receipts model. This means that the rate varies based on the business type. Again, it would include a small minimum fee. It also, in this model, reduces the categories that we currently have down to five base categories plus an exempt category, which we currently have in our rate structure. And it does assume the removal of the current taxation cap. Again, this approach is simple in that there's five taxable categories. It does also increase revenue. It increases equity by accounting for differences in business activity. But again, it does include a rate structure that varies based on business type. Next slide, please. Again, for the modeling purposes, we assumed five categories: contractor, general retail, property rental, services, professional, and an exempt. You can see in option one, the tiered rates for those different business categories. And in option two, we have the same categories, but an increase in the gross rate, noting, however, that in option one compared to option two, you'll see the difference in the general retail decreasing. Next slide, please. Again, based on these models, you can see what the potential revenue enhancement would look like. Under option one, potential increase in revenue of $3.3 million over, again, our existing base, which would bring the potential total up to about $9.9 million. And under option two, you can see that there's the potential to enhance revenue to a total of $13.3 million. Next slide, please. Again, if we matrix out our current tax rates and compare it to these various models, as well as the three cities of Berkeley, South San Francisco, and Walnut Creek, you can see what the hypothetical taxes will look like for these business categories. And again, you can note where Emeryville currently lies, where we potentially could see an enhanced revenue, and again, how that would compare to the other cities, being mindful that, of course, while we want to enhance revenue, we also want to remain competitive in some of these businesses, particularly the ones where we see competition with some of our neighboring cities. Next slide, please. And also as part of the analysis, we looked at the impact of the tax. Of course, if we change the rate model and increase the amount of revenue, the cap would also change proportionally. And you can see there the number of businesses that would be potentially impacted under a cap scenario. Next slide. And if it pleases the committee, we can stop and go over the business license tax slides in more detail, or I may proceed with the other revenue options, whichever is your pleasure.
Yes, I would like to see that, to see the business license tax options in more detail.
Okay. And we'll entertain any questions you have about the business license tax slides in particular, and then we'll move on to the other revenue options.
Madam Vice Mayor, did you have any questions for staff? Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. The next revenue option that staff explored was the concept of increasing our transaction and use tax, which we'll consider it as a sales tax. This approach would increase the current state and local sales tax by a potential 1/4 cent increase. We modeled this on Measure F, which the voters approved in 2020, which is also a 1/4 cent increase. We estimate that under the current economic conditions, this approach would generate about $2.25 million. However, as noted in the slide, it would bring the sales tax in Emeryville up to 10.75%, which is comparable to some cities in the peninsula, but definitely a larger increase compared to, say, our neighbors Berkeley and Oakland, which are currently at 10.25%. The transaction and use tax, of course, would be assessed on all taxable goods in the city of Emeryville, so residents, businesses, visitors who purchase goods and services that fall into that taxable category would pay the additional transaction and use tax. Next slide, please. The other option staff looked at is a transient occupancy tax, also known as a hotel tax, or also referenced as TOT. This is collected on transient guests for staying in a hotel, and the definition of hotel is fairly large and codified in our municipal code for dwelling, lodging, or sleeping purposes for less than 30 days. Currently, in fiscal year 25-26, we assume that TOT will yield $6.6 million in revenue. However, you can see that it, too, has not rebounded from the pandemic and has remained, is projected to remain fairly consistent in the next years. Next slide, please. For modeling purposes, we assumed that the transient occupancy tax could be increased upwards to 14%. Each 1% would generate about $450,000. And again, you can see the comparison with other cities. The comparisons range from 8% to 14%. Again, Emeryville is currently at 12. You can see if we increase to 14, we'd be right up there with Oakland. We would be higher than Berkeley. We would also be on par with San Francisco. Next slide, please. The final option that we looked at is the utility user tax. This is a 5.5% tax on the consumption of utility services. Our current budget, an estimate for this revenue source is just under $5 million. This revenue, however, is projected to increase absent any change in our rate structure, primarily due to increased electricity rates. Next slide, please. And many of our neighboring cities do charge a higher utility user tax on electric, gas, and telecom, as well as on cable and video, as you can see in the chart. Potential increases include raising the city of Emeryville's rate to additional 2%, which would generate just under $2 million. If we contemplated adding video service, we could potentially generate an additional $350,000. There's also the possibility to consider removing our current cap of $75,000. However, staff have not assessed what the impact would be economically to removing the cap. That's going to require a little bit more work in terms of actually looking at utility user data. But again, you can see our comparison jurisdictions range from 3.5 to upwards of 10%. Next slide, please. So again, the summary of options that we have looked at include a business license, the parcel tax, the the transaction and use tax, which you can refer to as the TUT. We looked at the TOT, which is the hotel tax, and then the UUT, the utility user tax. Again, the bulk of these options would require majority approval by the voters, with the exception of a parcel tax. Again, you can see the estimated increased revenue, again, using the higher estimated amount. We tried to look at the volatility of the actual revenue source. Business license is somewhat volatile. Again, it's related to gross receipts and how well a business is performing. Parcel tax is more stable in terms of sensitivity to economic factors. Both the transaction and use tax and TOT are sensitive to economic trends. They're based on consumer spending, the ability of people to have discretionary spending, and also consumer preference, particularly with a hotel in terms of travel and where they'd like to stay. And the utility user tax is a little less sensitive, although the rates being charged definitely are volatile. And then from a staff perspective, we looked at the ease of administration. Again, business license is reported by owners reported online using a portal from HDL. So again, from a staff perspective, fairly easy to administer. Parcel tax would require placing the parcels on the county tax roll each fiscal year. So some work involved there. It also relies on the accuracy of the tax roll by the county. The TUT is very easy to implement. It's collected by the state, and the state remits that back to the city quarterly. The hotel tax is also fairly easy to administer. It's self-reported by businesses, and such as the hotel and other lodging establishments, to the city. And the utility user tax is self-reported by the utility companies as well. Again, using the estimated revenue at the higher amounts, you could potentially generate $17 million in additional revenue. Next slide, please. Some other considerations or criteria that the committee may wish to look at, which some of these we just went over, again, include the adequacy or the fiscal impact. By this, we mean, will the measure raise sufficient and sustainable, meaning long-term revenue? Again, is it consistent, or does it face significant change with the economy? How does it impact the city's competitiveness? How does it impact equity in terms of who bears the tax burden? You may also wish to consider the legality in terms of what is the likelihood of a legal challenge to the ballot measure and voter approval. Again, based on historical data, have the voters in Emeryville approved tax measures that are similar to what we're looking at today? Next slide, please. As previously noted, the Budget Advisory Committee did meet this week as well on Tuesday and provided some recommendations to this committee. The Budget Advisory Committee did support the business license rate increase, which was the variable option two. In particular, they liked that the model did include removing the cap. They also had noted that that model had a much more lower rate and more sensitivity to the general retail category, which makes up a large majority of our businesses here. The BAC also recommended option three for the parcel tax, which was a hybrid of the land use. In particular, the committee recommended that a flat rate for residential parcels should not exceed $100. However, they were mindful of trying to potentially generate $5 million in revenue. As you may know, our model looked at what the building square footage cost would be for $4.5 million, but they did indicate that that square footage model could be reexamined to make up the $5 million revenue, noting again that the residential stay at $100 or less. They also supported having an income-based exemption for the residential parcels. There was support to increasing the hotel tax up to 14%. However, they did recommend that city staff reach out to hotel managers on the potential impact of a proposed increase. Again, hotel tax is driven by occupancy and room rate, and so there was some consideration of how an additional 2% might factor into that. The BAC was not supportive of a sales tax, the TUT, or the utility user tax. Again, they felt these were impacts that hit residents in particular, considered more pocketbook, active impacts. Individuals would note the impact when they would purchase goods or services of a higher TUT rate. And again, utility prices have already been increasing, particularly electricity. And so there was some sensitivity and concern about how the city leveraging an additional percentage might be passed through to the consumer. Next slide, please. Again, just to highlight, these were the BAC recommendations. You can see there under the $4.5 million revenue target, again, keeping the residential per parcel rate at $100. You can see our model currently had the building square footage for non-residential at 32 cents. But again, to make up that 500,000 mark to reach 5 million, we'd have to model that. And so it would increase proportionally. Next slide, please. And again, you can see there is the option two for the business license tax that the BAC recommended. Again, you can see the impacts across the business type, in particular the general retail. And again, you can see the potential increased revenue under that model, upwards of $13 million. Next slide. Again, in terms of our next steps, we're looking for any recommendations from this committee. We do plan to move forward with a similar presentation to City Council in November and just November through December. If council should provide direction to move forward on a revenue measure or potentially multiple revenue measures, we would engage in community outreach and surveying in January through April. We would then return back to council with the results of that surveying and work on drafting any corresponding ordinances and ballot measure through the spring and early summer months. All the required resolutions would need to be transmitted to the county the first week in August in order for a ballot measure or measures to be placed on the general election on November 3rd, 2026. It should be noted that if the voters do approve the measures, there would be a timing lag. It would vary depending on which business measure, which revenue measure we looked at. And again, some of that would council would have the option. For example, you may want to increase the new business rates starting in January. The hotel rates could increase in January of 2027 as well. However, a transaction and use tax per guidance from the state would not be actually collected and remitted to the city until April. So there is a different time lag on that particular measure. Next slide. Again, we're here to answer any questions you have about the various options we presented and look forward to your discussion and potential recommendations regarding which of these revenue measures you may recommend to the City Council. Thank you for your attention. And again, we're all, both Brian, our consultants, and me, myself, are available to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much for that presentation, Sharon. And also to you, Brian, and to HDL for all the hard work, having to give us a nice deep dive of where we are, what our options are, and also those comps for other cities, because we do know it's very important as we consider some of these that we remain competitive, but also we want to make sure that we have the appropriate financial health. And so I feel like we are in a very good place as far as our options. We've got a lot to choose from. And it feels, I appreciate the feedback also from the Budget Advisory Committee, obviously folks who would be voting on any potential measures and their feedback. Vice Mayor, I wanted to give you a moment. Did you have any questions before we kind of dive into a discussion?
Yes. So thank you so much again for the presentation. Appreciate it. And grateful that you're here, Brian. Appreciate that as well. Before we, I know we had looked at the budget before we broke for August. We looked at several options. I think at that time I had mentioned that we don't want to necessarily cut on staff, but I also was interested in where we can cut. What, for example, we had the CIP presentation earlier this week. I have been asking for a presentation or at least some data on what projects costs per project, where is it being funded, grants or general fund, where is the money coming from and what fund it's coming from of the city. I have not yet got the data. I think it would be helpful for the council at an upcoming presentation to see what is being spent where versus just this being discussed in committees. I would actually like to see that presentation as well in this committee. I don't think we have had a chance to see the detailed analysis of what a project is costing, where the grant is how is it being funded, whether it's being funded with a grant or by a general fund, and what's the viability of the project, where it is. We haven't seen that detailed analysis that would allow us to see where we could potentially cut before putting on measures on the ballot for people to consider. I think it is a very good way to balance a budget, to explore if there is any scope for cutting before you start increasing taxes on people. And I think that it just is something that we even do with our household budgets. So I think that it's even more important to do with a city budget. So to see what's going on, where it is going, and where there are potentials to move something or be more efficient about something. I would like a presentation on that, if we possibly could have that. So that is one of my feedback regarding, is that possible, or has that already been explored, and at what level? That's the question.
I think I can and hop in, and staff, please correct me if I'm wrong. When we do have our presentations, when we are specific, like we had our CIP update, but that since that was just an update, that was discussed previously. I distinctly remember when we went over the CIP plan to approve it, this is the budget for the specific projects. This is where it's coming from. And so that is actually been the practice that we do discuss while we're discussing before we as the council approve the project. This is how much it's going to cost. This is where the money is coming from. And of course, if you wanted maybe a more detailed conversation with staff, they do offer that. I do know. But before we approve a project, we do have to approve the funding source and everything it's coming from. So that's presented to us. But it sounds like perhaps maybe you want a deeper dive. And
absolutely.
Then that could be something you could talk to with staff even before the meeting.
I'm just wanting to know, when was it done last? When was it presented to council? And when, I know you remember it. I remember that it was not specific as to, there are things there that could have been explored better. It was a general, like the one that we had a presentation on earlier this week. It was a general update, and it was a general presentation. I think those are discussed a little bit in more detail at transportation and governance with the CIP. I just want to see where the opportunities are for us to tighten our belt, and I don't think this discussion has been had before, and I just want to know where so I can take a look at it.
So when we also had the discussion earlier when we were going over the budget deficit itself, we talked about the vacancies and what roles were going to stay vacant. There was also that discussion at that point in time. So that was a part as far as like where we could cut things, especially around personnel. That conversation also did happen in this committee back in May. So that also was a part of the discussion. But I think I understand what you are asking for specifically is that you, before we start doing this, you want an update on all of the places and spaces where we could potentially like cut waste. If there's something like maybe we can downsize, but that was a part of the conversation we were talking about the personnel staffing. And I think, Pedro, did you have something that you wanted to add on?
Yeah, when we did the budget process, we talked about the different funds and the that are used and the structural deficit that's within the general fund. But I think it's a good idea to update it, and probably with the presentation when we bring it back to council, we can show again what funds are being used for the different things. CIP has its own funds that use that don't impact the general fund, and then we have our expenditures under the general fund, and the revenues coming in is where the deficit is. And so that's where we really need to find the solution. And the discussions we've been having previously with all the staff and councils and committee is that these are the things that we need to address through a measure, but we should also always be looking at, can we be better with our expenditures and where can we find savings? So I think with the presentation that we bring up, in the near future, we can show where our expenditures are so it's clear and defined, and if there is an opportunity that someone feels that we could do better. But salary savings that we projected in keeping certain positions frozen that we can, or adjusting positions and underfilling, have been options we've been looking at.
And so just
and also in our staff report, we do have like the fiscal impact, like, and where what account it's going to be charged to. So every time we bring something to council, that's where it's stated as far as where the expenses come from and which account.
And just to reiterate, Pedro, the revenue piece, it's not our output, it's the revenues that we're struggling with, that we're making adjustments on. So if it was that we were overspending, that would be one thing and that would be quite clear, but it's clear from all of the presentations, and we've seen even specifically with the business license tax piece, that dip off that we had in 2021 versus our surrounding cities, our revenues have changed. And so that's why we're having to make the adjustments, because where we are now, it's structural that we'll keep building on this deficit if we don't change how we're bringing in our money revenue wise, correct?
Well, I think one of the things that we talked to the council about starting last October when I started working on this was that your revenues, to the council member Welch's point, and in particular, your development fee revenues are very volatile in this city, unusually so. In most cities, when the revenue in the development area, development tails off, it goes down a bit. Here, in a typical year, in a sort of what I'd call a base year, your development revenues are in the $4 million range. However, in past years, when you've had booms, let's call them, particularly in the life science arena, you've seen development revenues in the general fund anywhere from 10 to 13 million. And I think that's one of the reasons that in this city, it's so difficult for the finance team and the city staff to budget each year, because your revenues fluctuate much more than I've ever seen, frankly, in any city. So that is a challenge. And to the mayor's point, I think to the assistant city manager's point, there's two things to note here. One is, as the finance director indicated, you're looking at a $13 million target in terms of balancing the budget if you include the 5% vacancy factor. However, if you don't include that, then you're looking at $14.5 million. And the reason we made that distinction in the budget presentation and also in some of the presentations from the finance director is that the BAC and the BGC and the council all indicated to us earlier this year that you'd really prefer we come up with a strategy that not only balances the budget, but also eliminates the need for those salary saving assumptions. I think, again, given the magnitude of where you are in the short term, that's going to be difficult to do. But again, it's something that as your committee, BAC and the council looks at, that's something you could do. And then I think to the vice mayor's questions about capital, you could certainly do a deeper dive on where these projects are funded, because typically in a capital project, and here too as well, there are some projects like in streets and roads where you have, you know, gas tax monies, and that's primarily where that comes from, and you have, you know, sewer and water funds, and that's where those come from. And then for the projects that don't really have a original funding source, you're correct that actually comes out of the general fund. And you'll recall that the year before last, one of the challenges the city had is they projected a deficit and then they had to transfer another $7 million to support the capital fund. So the question becomes, and I think your point is right, that these are all interrelated. To the extent that the general fund is challenged, you may be less able to transfer those monies to the capital fund to support the capital projects that, let's say, don't have their own funding source, like roads, like water, like sewer, et cetera.
Thank you, Brian. And if I may, again, and thank you, council member, for clarifying some of these things that were discussed earlier. But my ask really was, had it been discussed in as much detail? And Brian, thank you for pointing out that it likely was not. And that is one of the things that my ask is. And the question then becomes, if there is a potential, like we did, to move reserve funds, to move things around, then I would like, is there a possibility for the council to have those, that big picture where we can move funds from CIP or vice versa to make sure that our general fund is balanced in the coming years? If that's a potential that can be explored, I would also like to see that in upcoming presentations.
And I guess one point too, to the vice mayor's point, earlier this year, when we did balance the general fund budget, part of the discussion was in fact to take money out of the capital budget. However, we did note at that time that these are one-time monies. So it's one of those things where in the short term, similar to your economic uncertainty reserve and other reserves you have, you can take one-time money to help address the issue in a year or two, but once you use that money, it's gone. And so the sort of revenue options that the finance director is highlighting for us today are ongoing revenues, and that you're going to see that money every year. So I think you're right in that in the short term, there's opportunities in the capital fund and in other funds to, and we did go through that earlier in the year, in other words, showing you several funds you could take money from on a one-time basis. But the larger issue, I think, over the five-year horizon that the finance director is highlighting here is to get some of those ongoing revenues. And part of the way as we built the budget that you have for this year is to, in fact, use both the revenue from Sutter for this current year and then in the next year use some of those one-time monies that you're describing, both the reserves and capital, to tide the city over until you can get in front of the council and the voters and ask the question, are you willing to raise one or more ongoing revenues? If you are, then you're not going to need to tap into the capital funds and the other reserves. But if you aren't, in the short term, you're going to have to do more tapping into those. And then longer term, eventually, you're going to have to look at other opportunities. So again, these are all things worth looking at.
No, I absolutely understand that the longer term opportunities. I just want to know, which you've clarified, that this can be done as a deeper dive, and I appreciate that. I would like to go ahead and explore it further because I think it's very important to have that data in front of you, that the capital improvements projects, these are the ones, and this is where they are. This is being funded. This is a one-time only. I think the big picture has to be presented in my mind. Having said that, I have another question about something called green fees and sustainability bonds. Is there any potential for that here in Emeryville?
Well, I think there are a number of opportunities in terms of both bonds and you know other grants and things. However, the key with bonds, of course, is you do have to create a cash flow to pay for the bonds. And again, that will come from the general fund unless there's another, you know, funding source in mind. There also are other tools like tax increment financing, like, you know, enhanced infrastructure districts and climate resiliency districts, et cetera, that could be looked at. So again, there are many, many tools out there. But I think the one issue with the bond would be you'd have to look at a revenue source to pay the debt. And that would be, I think, my concern there, a thing to highlight for you is since your general fund's already challenged, you probably want to be careful about adding bonded debt, which means then the general fund likely is going to be the place where you're going to have to be committing and locking up more money to retire that. So,
all right. Thank you.
Any other suggestions or questions for
staff? Yeah, I am trying to look at my notes and okay, I might have some. Can we go to slides 44, 45, and 46? 40, starting with 44. Thank you. So, Brian, thanks for mentioning about the. Your experience has generally been $100 per residential parcel, which is where it seems like BAC recommended or landed. I would like to maybe see the numbers with that. Are we exploring multiple of these? I think the TUT and UUT is out. Are we exploring multiple revenue measures when we bring them for a poll?
I think there's a couple considerations here. One is that usually when you, once the council provides directions on which revenue items you'd be interested in exploring, typically you'll hire your strategist and pollster, and they'll go out to the voters, do some outreach, and then ask the question. And one of the reasons you probably want to identify two or three revenue measures is perhaps not all of them will have a majority support. So you need to find that out. And I think that's consistent with what the BAC is recommending, saying these are the three we think you ought to bring to the BGC and council and you ought to ask the voters about. And again, understanding that while all of them, you know, are things that you have an interest in, the voters may feel differently. And I think, again, to your point about the parcel tax, that has been kind of the rule of thumb in other communities. You try not to get above $100 a year per parcel for residential.
Thank you. There might be something on 45, 46, but I think my question has been answered. But if we can go to those slides, I would like to see that. Because we live in an aging in place community in many of these areas, I think that many people are on fixed incomes. And there is also the sense of affordability. So I'm not very comfortable with 100. I probably go with 75. But at the same time, if that's a better revenue generator, it should definitely be pulled. So that's my feedback on that. But since we are still doing questions, I can go to the next slide about questions. And this is for the businesses, correct?
That's correct.
Between this and slide 45, you could potentially get to the amount that we are targeting, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Madam Vice Mayor. I was really happy to see the Budget Advisory Committee's recommendations. I do 100% agree with their recommendation as far as the parcel tax. As it's been mentioned several times here in this committee, and as every time we're having budget discussions, we've been subject to a lot of fluctuation. The parcel tax is the most of the stable options. It doesn't get us as high as a revenue expectation as the business license tax, but the business license tax can be volatile in its own ways too. Businesses are closing, unfortunately. Some people, you know, they estimated that the fallout from the pandemic would be happening well until 2027. So we've still got another 2 years to potentially weather a storm from the fallout, people going into debt, also people just retiring and wanting to do different things or, you know, move on where their motivation for closing their businesses isn't even financial. It's just lifestyle change, wanting to look to do something else. So I was very happy to see that they agreed on the parcel tax and just getting a temperature feel on if voters would be, you know, receptive to that type of tax. I agree with Madam Vice Mayor with, I do believe, and also the Budget Advisory Committee having an age income exemption, which also feels very, very standard amongst our neighbors as well, because we do not want to overburden people as we want them to be able to live here and age gracefully in Emeryville. We do not want them to be overtaxed or overburdened as their incomes change, as they retire, or maybe whatever type of circumstances might change for them financially. And so we want to make sure that we are being equitable in that way, especially if we're going to be adding to their tax responsibilities. Completely agree with the utility transfer tax. People are already, you know, PG&E claims that their rates are going down, but people don't feel it. Also with the sales tax, same thing with inflation. People are already paying a lot. We want to remain, we have a great retail base. People tell me they love coming here and shopping all the time. So I think that's one of our key drivers as a city. People enjoy coming here and eating here and shopping here and wanting to make sure that we're not adding to, unfortunately, what we're seeing on the federal level with inflation and the impacts that tariffs have had on many goods. So that's kind of off the table for me. When they mentioned sending out a survey to the hotel managers for the transit-oriented, for that specific tax, that's not going to happen until we're doing the community outreach. That wouldn't be going on until after the council's making its recommendation. It wouldn't happen any time beforehand for us to try to utilize that information to gauge as the council what we want to recommend for our own community outreach survey, because I feel like that's very specific data and feedback. Is there a way we could maybe get that feedback before, and then we could have it to discuss as a council? So, hey, you know, we feel like we could handle the tax and we feel like it's fine. So then as a council, we know, okay, we can put forth these two or three potential ballot measures, and let's put these three out when we're doing the general community outreach to get a temperature feel on the taxes or the potential revenue ballot measure.
Chair Welch, yes, we can, at the staff level, work with the hotel lodging establishments to try to bring that feedback to the city council. And you are correct, the community surveying that may transpire based on forthcoming discussion and decisions by council would, you know, be more global. And this is a very specific industry related. So we can work on that request.
Would it potentially be a heavier lift if we were going to survey business owners, particular smaller ones, around the business license tax increase?
Well, I would imagine that, to your point, Councilmember Welch, that if the council decides to move ahead with, say, a business license tax, that you would want to engage the businesses in general between the time you talked about potentially putting it on the ballot and putting it on the ballot. And the same is true with hotel, even though I know that in the BAC's case, one member was focused on hotel managers. And the key thing to remember, too, about the TOT is the tax isn't paid by the hotels. It's paid by the people who stay at the hotels.
Correct.
But I think you're right in that along the way, the staff and the council members would certainly want to talk to your business community and chamber about their thoughts about the business license tax, both in terms of the increases proposed and also the discussion of whether or not you'd remove the cap. I know in our discussions with HDL, we specifically asked them about that question, and they felt rather strongly that they, given that in your survey area and the trend in general is to remove those caps, that since you haven't touched your ordinance since the 1980s, it's time for you to do the same. And I also suspect that if you look at the third model in the business license tax, since most of the significant increases would be not only the three or four businesses that would be subject to the cap, but also categories like professionals and services and things like that, I would imagine that you in particular want to talk to those businesses since you're proposing to keep the general and retail category at the same level it is today. So there's not as much impact on that those folks, the smaller businesses, as there would be on some of the other categories. And just to make an observation, this is a pretty typical approach in terms of updating a business license ordinance. You tend to try to make it progressive, as HDL has done here, and you look at the relative profitability of the business categories. So obviously, in the retail and general category, which are the lower, tighter margins, if you will, categories, you tend to keep that at the $1 per thousand, whereas in the other categories, which are a bit more profitable, that's where you have the opportunity to increase it. I also thought an interesting observation from the HDL study was the disparity in the rental, both commercial and residential rental, between Emeryville and Berkeley, where we're talking about maybe a couple dollars per square foot, and they were in the 20 plus dollar range, which was pretty dramatically higher, and certainly we're not recommending anything like that here.
Exactly. Thank you, Brian. That was the last I had of my feedback. I know we've been in discussions and we'll have an opportunity to come back. Vice Mayor Carr, did you have anything else you wanted to add as far as giving feedback to staff?
Sorry, I was asking questions, and that's I combined it with my feedback. So, I mean, if there is any public comment on this item, that's unless we missed something, I don't have anything further at this time.
So this is an action item, and so we would move and just vote to give our recommendations and send it up to council with all the feedback that we've provided.
Sure. I mean, I'm fine with that. Do you want me to move the item? Do you want the feedback couched in specific terms, or do you have it and it will be noted on the minutes? Thank you.
I guess one thing I wanted to clarify is I heard a comment from Councilmember Welch about, in terms of the exemption on the parcel tax, that you would be inclined to look at it on an age-based exemption, whereas the BAC discussed that and decided they would prefer doing it on an income-based, on the logic that in some cases some seniors may be rather affluent and others not.
That's true.
But again, it's up to you in terms of your recommendation from this committee. The other discussion that they had, which again, you know, it's up to you what you recommend, is in terms of the finance director's point about ease of administration, to use something like the PG&E, what they call the CARES program. And what other cities have done typically is when you have an exemption based on income, is you ask someone to submit to the city proof each year that they are qualified under the PG&E low income program. And then the city doesn't have to go out and collect income information or paperwork. So that was the other part of their recommendation related to exemptions.
Oh, yes. Sorry. To clarify, it was income. I was thinking of points in time in life when your income might change. Retirement is very typical of that. But yes, we do have members, seniors of the community who are quite wealthy, and this wouldn't apply to them. And so, yes, based on income was my thought as far as an exemption. And so with that.
Do you want me to move the item?
That's fine.
I will move that the research and revenue measures for 2026 discussion be accepted by the council. By this committee, and moved forward to the council with the feedback that was provided today, along with the feedback that was provided by the Budget Advisory Committee.
I will second. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you, everyone. We have no item six, we have no information items. And then item seven is just our future agenda items. And so 7.1, review ordinances on multifamily residential inspections for lead, mold, and substandard conditions. Review ordinances on multifamily residential. It's just there twice. 7.2 is review holding one council meeting per month and holding monthly council committee meetings. And then 7.3 is review fees for pet license. Did staff have any updates on those future agenda items when they be potentially becoming in front of the committee?
Chair Welch, not at this time, but we can provide an update at your next meeting in October in terms of when we think we'll be able to bring the other items forward.
And Madam Vice Mayor, you had a comment or question?
Yeah, a comment and a question. It's on item 7.2. I think this is the one that I had requested. I know we came before the council, June 15th we came, or was it, it's gone so fast, about the potential changes to the committees. And I was wondering if this could alleviate or help with some of the efficiencies and maybe help with making this, you know, staff less burdened, because if we could have those monthly council meetings, potentially it would ease some burdens on the staff. And it may just be something to consider along with any other, I think we did a study session on that at one of the council meetings, right? And it involved changing things around, and this may be a way to maybe mitigate some of those things if it could be combined with that, if you're planning to bring it up again. That would be my request.
Madam City Manager, did you have to add?
I just was going to have the city clerk comment on that, because I believe that first item has been approved by the council already. And so we can look at 7.2 as we are moving forward toward implementing the items that the council majority approved a couple of weeks ago, because they are certainly, we could get some alignment there for efficiency and effectiveness, as the vice mayor is stating. But if the city clerk can just confirm, I thought we received the council majority on that item already for implementation.
Okay. Yes, Madam City Manager, we did. The council approved the item, and that's what we're planning on moving forward with at this time.
Okay, thank you. So yes, Vice Mayor, we will absolutely factor in 7.2, a review of holding one council meeting per month and holding monthly council committee meetings as we are considering the implementation of that item. Thank you.
Clarification, yeah. Chair. Did you talk about 7.1 already? Or is this something that's coming up? City Manager?
I do not believe we've talked about 7.1. My reference was 7.2. And I
my misunderstanding. So I must not have heard it right. So you're referencing 7.2.
I am.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Right. Appreciate it.
Okay. We look forward to those updates. Item 8 is announcements and member comments. I had none. All right, and item 9 is adjournment. Madam Secretary, the time is 11:27 a.m. This meeting is adjourned. Next meeting will be October 7th, 2025 at 3:30 p.m.